Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Urban Education Project. This is episode 3. Stay tuned. Stay with us. Make sure you enjoy, like, comment, and share. Enjoy the podcast.
Hey, world. We're back again with episode 3. We got UEP, also known as Urban Education Project, but we would love for you to just say UEP. Mm-hmm. Today's topic is going to be factions in the urban community. Factions. What is a faction? Faction is something that is something that we use as a division between us, that we define as something that's not common ground, something that defines us and makes us unique. And within our community, you know, as one overall question that people have that they long for, that they ask in public, and sometimes they keep on their person, and they say, why can't we get things together? Why can't we do anything together? And why can't we do things in unity or in unison? And first thing people say is, oh, because we don't trust each other. But that's a fallacy. That's a figment of everybody's imagination. It's not because we don't trust each other. It's because we are broken up into so many factions that when I overall think about it, I think it is diabolically planned, you know, so you can be in these small groups, these small constructs, these small frameworks, and you feel comfortable in these small tribes that you have created. And the African diaspora, or the Black diaspora, as you will, is something that we can find as a common ground. I mean, I guess we can look at, you know, our historical disenfranchisement as a common ground. And we can look at, something we can look at from civil rights to civil liberties as something that's common ground that we all align with, that we probably should look at more than the things that separate us. I think there's more that we have in common than that we have that's not common. But today's whole podcast is about factions in the urban community and why they, in my opinion, you may think something different, Jimmy may think something different, but just in my opinion, I think it's a horrible, horrible construct in the way that we use it today. They may have started out pure and supposed to help the community, but they don't. So, Jimmy, take it away.
Man, you kind of opened a can of worms on that one, but let's go. So, pretty much for today, for this podcast, we're going to go into, you know, your religion, your different faction of religion, which is at the cornerstone of the urban or the African-American community. You want to go into fraternal organizations. And just and what we have in common ground. We're going to go over those things. We're going to break it down. Like I said, this is just from our islands, from our view. You know, you can agree to disagree, you not agree at all. But let's just have an open dialogue.
But make sure in the open dialogue, you put some comments down and share about what you think. You know, our views are not absolute, but it's something to put into the universe. See what we get back. We may get some negativity, we may get some positive stuff, but at least overall, we have to establish, one, a conversation, two, what can we all agree that is the common ground between us to advance any platform, to advance whatever, I guess, our paradigm is, advance our diaspora to moving us forward in, I guess, what you would say the 21st century. You know, what's that next generation has to look forward to? What are we putting in place now for the generation that's coming after us to be able to look forward to? And how are we throwing that alley hoop? You know, are we going to close the game out and start a new game for the next generation? You know, so Jimmy pretty much referenced religion.
It's a touchy topic,
but you know, with us as Black people, minorities, urban community, you know, people, they don't touch my religion, right? Because it's my rights. And, you know, then you got the other thing, whereas you got the fraternal organizations, you know. But we'll start with the religion. We'll break down every last one of these little things, and we'll go into each one of the topics, you know, for the sake of time, just to make sure we get everybody's understanding so we can get up under your skin, you know. If you're not a free thinker, if you're not a person that likes, you know, think tanking and dialogue, and not that I'm sneak dissing anybody out there, but a lot of times we don't like to be able to hear. We are very dismissive, just as a people in America anyway. So you've got the different religions, right? So if you look at people that consider themselves as Christians alone, just within the whole Christian religion and construct, you can't even get along with yourselves. You know, I mean, like, you got, okay, a bunch of Christians, you got what, Catholics. I'm not gonna name all these rites, so I'm just letting you know that right now. So you got Catholics, you got Baptists, you got AMEs, you got non-denominational, you got Methodists, you got any kind of backwater, you know, Christian whatever that people are coming up with. Some people call themselves Protestants, you know, but, you know, most people, if they're followers of Christ, and I guess they all come from the same Bible, but for some reason, reading the same book, everybody has a whole different connotation of how they feel like the religion should hold certain disciplines, certain truths, certain traditions. And with those traditions, i.e. when you put a name on it and you start breaking down the denominations, that's where I see that divided we stand. United we stand, divided we fall. And I see so far that this is how our community gets divided. We start breaking up into all these different pieces and not really focusing on what we would consider as a common ground to, I guess, catapult our agenda to what we would all agree monolithically, which is a common ground success, what we consider what we want our agenda to be. And so within that, why do we have so many different factions? You know, is it by design? So that's within the Christian religion. The next religion is Islam.
Well, hold on, let me go back real quick.
Oh, you gotta go back? Go ahead.
Just real quick, I mean, we're looking at the Christian religion. I know in a lot of cities, big or small, you can find 5 to 7 different churches on one city block.
Yeah.
And that lets you know right there that because one guy or one gal did not like what the main church on that block may be, the First Baptist Church. I'm not knocking anybody First Baptist Church, but that First Baptist Church, they didn't like the way the pastor was running business, so they opened up their new church, and if so on and so forth, so on that block. So we just have a bunch of different factions, but we need to just come together on one common ground to push the agenda that we have for our people.
I can tell you this, the other religion that we kind of broken up into is Islam, you know? And I guess you can, without trying to disrespect each of religions, you've got the Nation of Islam that's technically what you would call Islam, or, you know, they call themselves Muslim. But that's really the only offhand faction when it comes down to anything pertaining to anyone in that type of religion. But for the most part, just my background, I wasn't raised Islamic or Muslim or anything. There's nothing wrong with it. But what I can say is, studying all these different religions and books and reading about different people's level of faith, you know, either from reading the Tanakh to reading the Bible, to reading the Quran, you even got the Egyptian Book of the Dead, right? And so once you start looking at all these different books and all these different literatures and readings, you start to see similarizations in a lot of the text. And so you start asking yourself, if all these people kind of have some of the same literature in it, then why are they so different? And why, when you put one in a room, or when you put another one in a room and actually just bring the elephant in the room, which is, you know, what do you feel about my religion versus your religion? Then it gets a bit dicey, right? Mm-hmm. So I always marvel at the fact that you ask each one of these Christian organizations by themselves about Islam, then they'll have something slick to say. But one thing that I can say that Islam does do is, if there's a mosque, then there's that mosque within like 50 mile to 100 mile radius. That's it. Everyone that's has Islamic faith goes to that. And so within that, you build a community. Within that community, you can almost start leveraging each other and networking. But Christianity, especially in poor neighborhoods, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, when you start looking at some of these churches, you almost see that they're almost by design to be like collection points almost. I mean, I don't want to get into the collection point philosophy because that's almost a whole nother podcast.
Oh, it is. It definitely is.
But at the same token, it's like, why don't you have one church and all those people that read the Bible or follow the Christ go into that one place of worship and everyone just network, build as a community, become pillars, find common ground, pretty much, you know, push that agenda from a Christianity standpoint. But instead, you know, it's breaking off into these different factions. And so on Sunday, I know a famous quote from Dr. King, he said, the most segregated time in America is on Sunday between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m., you know? And what was crazy about that is a lot of people looked at that as like, oh, yeah, it's because, you know, you got white Christians, you know, don't go to black Christian churches. Black Christian churches don't go to white Christian churches. But necessarily, that's not just a black or white thing. You got a lot of predominantly black churches that are right across the street from another church will absolutely not find time in 30 years to even cross paths. Half of these people know each other already. Some of each other work together, but they will not worship together, even though they preach from the same book. But it's because it's broken up into a faction where I like my services to be this way, I like my services to be that way, or I like the way this pastor preaches versus that pastor. So now you've completely, instead of assimilating and building as a community and, you know, providing the different pillars of what the church used to be. A lot of people, you know, you've got worship centers. A lot of people think they go to church, but they don't go to church. You know, the church is a pillar in the community. You know what I mean? So it should provide some kind of discipline, you know, spirituality, you know, community, you know, some form of love, something like that, when it comes down to what you can gain from that, you know, where you can build there, you can find, you know, sanctuary there, you know, all those good things. Some people go to a worship center, which they confuse as the church, you know, totally different. Worship center is a private company. When you look them up, they probably LLC or incorporated, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it goes to show you how you got all those different factions, mm-hmm. you know, that's kind of broken up into that. And so when I tell people, when you start looking at the different agendas and things that are happening in our communities, you know, in one neighborhood, right, if you just look at the buying power between, let's say, seven churches that are collection points on Sunday, that takes up all that money out of one community, you know, that don't have to preach the same vision, the same message, and they're not aligned. But one thing that they do is take money from that church on Sunday, and on Monday, it goes to the bank that none of you can probably get a loan at, because even though you're partners with the bank, you don't hold the bank accountable for what you want to see the bank do with your money in your community. Even though the bank's taking your money and they're investing it and making money off of it. And so I said that to say this right here. That's a lot of division just within the Christian church.
It is.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, that's, and then not to mention, like, you won't even, like, I've had a lot of talks with Christians, and, you know, and they're like, oh, yeah, I talked to a Muslim, and he said something about, you know, assalamu alaikum. Like, what kind of crap was that? Don't tell me assalamu alaikum. I was like, what did you tell him? I don't know. I just ignored him. I said, but you're a Christian, you know? I mean, he met you with blessings, you know? If you, they said, what else? So what am I supposed to say? So if he tell you assalamu alaikum, he say you what alaikum salam. You know what I'm saying? Like, peace be unto you. You know what I mean? Like, it is what it is. Or he give you inshallah. You know what I'm saying? God willing. You know, but as Christians, you gotta ask yourself, if Muslims have a greeting that whether you sick, tired,
mad,
sad, happy, no. Sad, don't matter. It's a requirement to greet each other in love and blessings. We meet Christians every day, and you never know what you're going to get. And that's not all Christians, but at the end of the day, because of all these factions, you're not aligned upon the one covenant. You're not aligned upon the one sense or monolithic view of who God is, how God should be worshipped, how the community is supposed to in turn be. And so that's why you don't have control of real estate, because when it's all said and done, because you've broken yourselves up into so many different factions, you don't have control of the whole pie. You don't have control over the sense of, one, the young men in the neighborhood. You should be the protectors, the guys that you teach, mentor, and coach to build the community, to keep the community protected. You know, because of that, you have... I went to a church, I kid you not, man. I was the youngest dude in there. You know what I'm saying? And I'm in my 30s. Youngest dude in there. So I asked myself, what the hell are the young men between the ages of like 5 and like 35, 36, 37? Like, what are you? The next older dude was like 55, 60. So then you go right there with entire generations
missing.
And also, you know, yeah, you got mega churches that got tens of thousands of people in there. But you got to ask yourself, a lot of times with a lot of these mega churches, and you got people that own their way to try to be mega churches, these guys not even adopting the neighborhood in their surrounding area.
It's in Africa.
But these guys are creating churches in Bangladesh and India. Korea and India and Africa and all those stuff. And you're raising all this money, and the logistics is killing a percentage of the money and what you're going to impact. So how do you pass over the neighborhoods that you're in?
You ride by every day.
But you feel like you want to do an impact around the world to diversify and spread the gospel. And how do you go to a whole other continent and you haven't even sat down with another congregation of people that's across the street that you call Christians? It doesn't make sense. But when you look at us as a community, when you look at the African diaspora, when you look at the urban community, and people start acting like, I just don't know why we don't work. Well, we'll start with there. The factions that break up the urban community. And so, if you notice, it didn't have much to say about the Islam faith, because at the end of the day, you got Islam, you got Christianity, and you got most Christians don't really even engage and interact with Muslims, you know? And then you got your offhands. No offense to the offhands, I'm sorry, it's my opinion. You know, you got the different, like Jehovah's Witnesses and stuff like that. You know, people are literally like shutting their doors on them and like slamming, closing the curtains, and like them people see you, man. But you gotta ask yourself, what is it in their spirit that gets them to do door-to-door ministry for years? When I read the Christian Bible, I read the Quran, you know, I read the Tanakh. You know, most people try to say it's the Torah, but you know, like, look, like, yeah, the Torah, that's the first 5 books of Moses, you know, but that's in your Bible. You also got parts of it in the Quran. A lot of people don't even know. If you read all three, you're going to see some of the same verses in there, especially when you start looking at Genesis. Genesis is the same story in all three books. You know? Not Genesis, I'm sorry. Exodus. You know? So when you start looking at a lot of that stuff, it's like, you start realizing the similarities, and you got to ask yourself, what in history start deriving us to be so separated and start feeling so like, oh yeah, we, you know, I'm going to build this little tribe and we're going to do our own thing. But united you stand, divided you fall. Fraternal organizations, right? The other sensitive subject for
this whole topic is sensitive.
And the whole topic is sensitive because most of the people in the fraternal organizations are members of the church. You know?
They're in charge of the religious organizations.
Yeah.
A lot of times.
So in our community, you know, you got what you call the Divine Nine, right? And if you don't know what the Divine Nine is, you look them up, right? Divine Nine were the nine original, I guess, fraternities and sororities that were started at different colleges throughout in our history. I think first one started in like 1909 or something like that.
I want to say 06.
06?
Alpha
yeah.
Phi Alpha.
Alpha Phi Alpha, okay.
Incorporated.
Yeah. So you got those guys, and you got the different other ones, you know. You got Omegas, and you got your Kappas, and you got your Deltas, and you got your
Sigmas,
and all that. I'm not going to go through all that.
It's nine.
Nine original ones, and then you got the other people out there trying to pretty much bite whatever these guys are doing and the groundwork they're doing. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to all Divine Nine. And really appreciate some of the groundwork you're doing. But I can say, as of late, I'd say the last 15 to 20 years, even that construct has kind of been a way to kind of be a faction, because you start looking at, you know, you got all these college graduates that have come from probably backgrounds mostly of the black church, if you will, in a lot of urban areas around the globe, and you find this organization that, you know, you start reading these rich histories and all these people that started, your founders started with this adversity, and they started for a reason. There was a reason that they started it, and it was a great reason, and it's historical, and it's something to be proud of. Then you have to ask yourself, today as it functions, are we leveraging these organizations in the community the way we need? Are those communities teach, mentoring, and coaching the next generation to go to college, to, you know, get after it? And I guess what you also say, which is another podcast we have, so what is your brand? What does your brand say to our neighborhoods? And so what I would like to see is, okay, I keep saying it, I keep dropping it, instead of adopting highways, adopt a neighborhood, you know?
I agree, totally agree.
Because, I mean, when it's all said and done, you know, you got Divine Nine, they do their thing, you know. Me, I've worked personally with couple different organizations, specifically Omega Psi Phi. You know, shout out to those guys. Working with what they would consider Omega Men that did some tremendous work in the community. But I've also tried to challenge a lot of them and some of the agendas. Even though me being an outsider, I mean, yeah, you got chapter business, so you're not privy to certain things. But as a volunteer to a lot of these things, because I want to show that when we do have humanitarian crises like the floods in South Carolina, the floods that was in Louisiana, Bush flush that was a man, I'm going blank, man. What was the one where Katrina? Like, why everybody was sitting back? Why weren't we literally, you know, mechanizing all these organizations and leveraging all the resources that each one of them had, along with our urban community, along with all these other fraternal organizations, such as the Masonic Lodges, the Eastern Stars,
100 Black Men of America,
100 Black Men of America, all these different organizations to get together, mechanize for one common goal, you know, which was to, you know, steal humanitarian effort. And I'm not talking about just money, you know. UEP, what we realized when we did the Louisiana
Baton Rouge
floods was, you're sending all this money to these different organizations, and it's so many resources that they spend about a week trying to do the logistics on this stuff, trying to stack all the water, account for your monies, and get all that stuff done. Well, guess what? The victims don't have time for the wait for that stuff, and they need more muscle along with the resources, you know, to help for the FEMA assessments.
Yeah.
To knock down walls and do sheetrock work and spray for black mold, take out all the appliances and stack them up, you know, and tag them, you know, and do things of that nature, like actual physical work. They needed the men from our communities to be present, to have a presence there to actually do the work, you know. And with this podcast, just saying, like, when you have so many factions, you have so many views, sometimes we can create these different tribes, and to a degree where we feel like we're making impacts, but we're not. No,
we're definitely ineffective.
We're ineffective when we have so many different factions, you know. And if you're gonna have so many, we gotta find some kind of conglomerate or some kind of way, you know, or some kind of organization or some kind of forum where we get on one accord, have an agenda that's monolithic to everybody, common ground, and we execute. It's no bickering. I don't give a crap about what I saw some Christian organization did. I don't care what I saw some Islamic or Muslim organization did. I don't care what some fraternal organization did. At the end of the day, to the world, nobody sees our religion. Nobody sees what fraternal organization we're in.
They don't see our face.
People see our face and they recognize the African diaspora, and they have to say that, hey, at the end of the day, we respect the fact that the plight of your people was this, this, and this. Then we act accordingly on that as well. You know, we look at the culture that's built from that. But you don't let me freaking get all this run on, bro.
Man, you're in a groove, man.
I mean, I feel you, but you know, I'm passionate about this, man. I mean, I'm very passionate about this because I just, when I look at, I like the problem solve. And it's like, we've been seeing the problem, we complain about the same things, but we don't aggressively look for solutions for change. We don't make ourselves vehicles for change.
So I guess the question I ask you, since you know, this is your topic, why you think there are so many gaps in the communities? Is it, do you think it's because one faction may think, okay, the other group has that area, so we're not going to worry about it? So is there a drop off somewhere, lack of communication? What do you think is?
It's communication and transparency. And when it all boils down to it, I mean, when you look at like local municipalities and governments, you look at the Katrina thing. Everybody just assumed
that was a mess,
that there was gonna be a magic button, that some help, something was gonna happen. And I've got a couple months under my belt when it comes down to, one, do what you can whenever you can, however you can. Two, if not me, then who? You know? So it's kind of like, if you don't see nothing getting done, then put something together and aggressively get it done and worry about who told you stepped on later. Because if it was their job, then the situation should have never even developed to get as toxic as it was. But instead, we literally as a community, like we do with all these videos of shootings and violence and humanitarian crisis, we watch it on TV like it's a blockbuster film. We either A, complain about it, you know, amongst our own tribes. We two, still don't do nothing about it. We three, we don't figure out how to not make it happen again. And four, we forget about it because it's a continuous cycle, because there's always the next big thing. Like, who's gonna get shot next week? Whose community gonna drown and waste next year? Why? Because our attention span is so small, because we leave ourselves in a catatonic state of awe and euphoria to say, oh man, I can't believe that happened. But nobody's trying to figure out how to get it done through laws, through actual movement, voting, none of that. We keep addressing these things in a one-dimensional view.
Can't do it that way.
Everything that needs to be done, if you look at Urban Communication Project's whole thing, it's about a formula. We can't be one-dimensional. It has to be a 3 to 4-dimensional view. You have to do some things in parallel. You have to plan vertical and horizontal. You have to make sure that you see every aspect of the problem and bring all the stakeholders to the table. And when they come to the table, you find common ground. I don't care what your religion is. I don't care what sex, whatever you have. I really don't give it. I really don't care. I don't.
You can cuss on the podcast, by the way.
I can? Oh, hey. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
It's our podcast, man. We do what we want doing this.
Yeah. No, I really don't care, man. I mean, but when you start looking at, we're repeating the same thing. And another thing, I notice we get more and more attentive. Our posture changes to a posture of aggression and ready to get something done about other people's movements than we do our own movement. When I say movement, I don't mean marching. I don't.
No, not a fan of it.
I don't mean marching. Like, if somebody want to march, that's cool. That's what you want to do. That's how you feel like you're getting it done. But the problem is this right here. To me, we've been shown different ways of handling issues. We've been shown passively marching and showing you that I'm a human being and getting punched in the face, that's a way, and not much got done. But, you know, a passive band-aid, you know, because you're still getting beat by police, you're still getting killed by police, you still don't feel like you got civil rights, which that's another thing. You shouldn't be fighting for civil rights. You should be making sure you have your civil liberties. You should be reading the Declaration of Independence. And you should be making sure that you understand the Constitution and your inalienable rights as a person that's born here in this country, that's a naturalized citizen, that's a natural born citizen. Those are the things that you have. Civil rights is something that can be taken away. Don't worry about the civil rights. Those, if you play this game well, it's called making sure that you get enough capital, human capital, as well as actual capital as well, you know, to be able to influence change. When you look at the Asian community, they're not worried about when was the last time Asians marched? When was the last time you seen them, you know, screaming about this, or screaming about not being in the movie, or screaming about this and that? They got their head down, they're building businesses, They're creating jobs. They're buying land. They're investing. And they're building that economy amongst themselves. And they use their money to influence law. They use their money to influence local government. They lose their money and they use their money in position to influence that. So you don't see anybody going to their neighborhoods and policing them and running up and down because they're owners. When you posture yourself to be able to sit at the table and have a seat at the table, conversation's different because your posture's different. When you get in the owner's box, your vantage point is different. You see things different. That means that you're able to make a better sound decision to make things happen. I get it. We're getting it from the mud, we're from the bottom. But when you look at rich people, I challenge you to do this right here. When you see that rich person, ask yourself at what generation did somebody in that family said, the buck stops here. I may not get to enjoy the riches, but I want to make sure that I grind it out and I make sure that the next generation can take what I'm building and create generational wealth, if that's the case, you know.
Damn, man.
You got nothing for it?
I ain't got nothing for it, man.
So you
soaked this one up.
I mean, hey.
You literally soaked up the whole conversation. So
for me, I tell you what. I will end this one. So this is one of the ones that I can go for days on. And I definitely want to hear your comments. I want you to like, comment, share. If you don't like it, you don't like it. But if you do, it's for you. If you don't, maybe it's not for you. Maybe I'll see you in a couple years and maybe you'll get it. But make sure you don't dismiss it. Take everything that I said, give it a once over. And maybe I'm looking at things in a one-sided view. But if I'm looking at it in a one-sided view, make sure you like, comment, and share. And drop down what you think the view is, because for me, it's not a us versus them. It's not because there's enough factions within the urban community right now to where, you know, we always blame the system, we blaming that person and that person. I'm breaking it down for you right now. Even within that, I haven't named a bunch of other organizations on purpose, but you know who you are. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, we are creating our own tribes within a tribe, and we're begging other people to accept us when we don't have a face. We have many faces, and it's hard to trust a person that's a chameleon of the world. You know, even though everybody loves the same line, we're not monolithic, but people of culture, people of status, they are monolithic. Because they have a culture, they've established a language, they've established who they are as a people, and they've agreed upon that. They are respected for that, and from that, they fall in a certain status. Some of us want to be black, some of us want to be African-American, and some of us don't want to be known as either. Some people say, I just want to be American, and I say it all as well. You know, go be American. It's cool. I like it. I would love to be American. The Constitution tells me that I'm American. We're one of the only countries that put colors on people. But until then, until America grows, right now, the game is to figure out as a community how to keep your head down, find your true north, build together, learn together, find common ground. Push whatever agenda we have as a community and grow. That's it. This is Urban Education Project. This your boy O. That's Jimmy. Thanks for listening. You guys have a great evening.